Now we're holding on Nun Zayin Amud Beis, the second line from the bottom. The Mishnah had said that when it comes to Hekdesh, we have different rules that apply that are different than with property of a Hedyot, and among them is, we said, Shem Chinam Enyim Nishba V'chola, we said that a Shem Chinam of something of Hekdesh, if something goes wrong in the type of thing, where as a Shem Chinam, he would normally have to swear, for example, if a thing was lost or stolen, and then he's potter from paying, if it's Hekdesh, then he doesn't swear. Because we said all those dinim apply to Re'ehu, which means a fellow Yid, therefore not Hekdesh. So the Gemara says a Ruminu. I have a contradiction from a Mishnah in Shkolin. Now you have like this every year they collect the matzah shekel, and people would send. Not everybody brings their matzah shekel in person to Yerushalayim, of course. People would send it with a messenger. In particular, now what you have is like this. So people would send their matzah shekel from all over. Three times a year, they had to get. It was supposed to be that it would get to the Beis Hamikdash by Rosh Chodesh Nissan, because Rosh Chodesh Nissan is the beginning of the Beis Hamikdash's fiscal year. The karbanos of that year are supposed to be bought using the new money that came in. Three times during the year, they would go into the chamber, into the room where all the money was kept, and they would send somebody in over there, and they would take out. And they would take out boxes of coins, and then they would go and spend those on the different operating expenses of the Beis Hamikdash. They needed them to buy the materials for Karbanos. They needed them to pay certain people's salaries. We learned about Ksubas, for example, people who taught the Kohenim how to shecht, and then various other Dayanim and other people who are important for the functioning of the Beis Hamikdash. This is all aside from Bedek HaBayis. You have Bedek HaBayis, which is actual physical upkeep and repair of the Beis Hamikdash. That's something else that came out of other money. But you were talking about the Trumas HaLishka money that was taken out of the chamber where they kept the Matzah Shekel. So three times a year, before Pesach, before Shavuos, and before Sukkot, they would take money out of there. And as the Gemara is going to go on to say, each time they would have in mind that it's also going to cover the money that has not yet arrived in the Beis Hamikdash that's on its way, with the idea that way everybody, no matter where they live in the world, is going to be included in the korbanos tzibur that are being bought with that money. So now, the Mishnah describes, B'nei ha'ir sh'shokho shikleihen, you have people from a certain city sent their matzah shekels to the Beis Hamikdash, the nignavu sh'avdu, and on the way they were stolen or they were lost. So it depends. If Rashi explains, first of all, let's explain according to Rashi. If when they came to a din Torah, so now they need to take the shliach to a din Torah, because the shliach is either a shem achinam or a shem asachar, as we're going to go on to see. So, and if it's a shem achinam, then normally they have to swear, and if it's shem asachar, then normally for the name of Aveda, they have to pay. But we're going to see in the Gemara soon what the details are. Anyway, so if they go to a din Torah with the shliach after nitrima hatruma, after one of those times when they already took money out of the collection boxes in the Beis Hamikdash, so then at that point yishvorim lagizvorim. So now, who do the shlokim swear to that they weren't pesheya? They swear to the gizborim, to the treasurers of the Beis Hamikdash. Because at this point, since, as the Gemara is going to say soon, when they take the truma, they have in mind also the coins that have not yet been, the coins that have not yet reached the Beis Hamikdash, and they include also al ha'avud, they include also anything that may have been lost on the way, because they want those people to have their share in the korbanos as well, after all. So now, at this point, in effect, that money already belongs to Hekdesh. Therefore, the Gizbarim are therefore the Gizbarim, the Baal Din over here, the Gizbar is the one who, who is it in effect that's taking the Shluchim to Beis Din would be the Gizbarim. They'd be saying, look, you know, Hekdesh owns this money, and we want you to swear that you weren't careless with it. So there's our question. You see that you do swear to Hekdesh, not like our Mishnah. So that's the point. But first, we're going to quote the rest of the Mishnah. The Imlav Mishvoyim of Neir here. If not, if it was before Nitzer Vahatruma, so now that would be meaning that the people of the city found out what happened, that the money was lost or stolen or whatever, before the Truma was even taken out. So now at that point, the money doesn't yet belong to Hekdesh. It still belongs to the people of the city. So and when they take truma, when they do take the truma, when they do take the money out in the boxes out of the chamber over there, they're not having them in mind, because they know the people are gonna have to designate and give other matzah shekel. So therefore, it's the Bnei Ha'ir, so Nishbarim, the Bnei Ha'ir, it's the people of the city who sent these shluchim, who are the Baalei Dinim, and therefore the shluchim would swear to them. Now that's all according to Rashi. Tosfos has some difficulties with that. And so Tosfos explains rather that im nitruma truma nishbarim lagizbarim actually means that the money already came to the money already came to the gizbarim. So the money came to the gizbarim, and then it was nigna shalom. So now at that point, even if it was before nitruma truma, the owners have already been yotze, because they already gave it, and when it already came to the hand of the gizbar, and the gizbar, when he goes and takes the boxes of money out before Pesach, he has in mind what was lost and what was already collected and is already. So Tosfos learns that in that case then, so now in our Mishnah, in other words, we're saying, so what we mean is when we say in the Gemara, in other words, when we say that terminala over balagogri, etc., what we mean is that they have in mind anything that already came to the gizbar and then was lost before the truma was actually taken. And then they also have in mind alagogri, what is in the hand of the shliach on the way, what's coming on the way and hadn't reached yet. Even though it was lost after they already took the truma. So according to Tosfos, in other words, in short, so if the gneva took place where the Mishnah says achashenitruma truma, meaning that at the time when they took truma, the shkolim was still already in the hand, were already in the hands of the shliach, then the people of the city were already been yotze. That were already yotze, therefore they're not the Baalei Dinim, therefore the shluchim would swear to the gizbarim. If the gneva, so that's the point. Rashi says we're talking about when the Bnei Ha'ir found out what happened and when they take them to Beis Din. According to Tosfos, it's not when they found out; it's when the theft actually took place, or the loss. We have to find out when that was relative to nitruma truma, and that will depend, therefore, whether the money is already considered to belong to Hekdesh and they already had it in mind when they took the truma or not, and therefore they're going to swear to the gizbarim or to the people respectively. The Mishnah continues, Nimtzu, if later on they find these lost matzah shekel, Oshech Ziruma Ganovim, or if the Ganovim return the money that they stole, Eilav Eilav Shkolim, then both the old and the new are considered Shkolim, because we're saying the first Shkolim were lost, therefore the people of the city had to give other matzah shekel in the second case, the Shvarim of Ne'er of Ne'er Shokun Tachtehen. So now the people of the city have had to give new matzah shekel. Now when you find the old one, we don't say it's called a hekdesh betos. We don't say that it was a mistake in a hekdesh, and therefore it's not matzah shekel. It is matzah shekel. And both of them are given to the Bis Mikdash. The Ein Olam Lahem Lashana Abba, and it doesn't count towards next year, meaning they can't say, well, this year we gave two matzah shekel, therefore next year we're potter. No, both of them end up going to Hekdesh. The Rashi brings later on down on the Amud that there were two separate sets of collection boxes in the Bis Mikdash and everywhere else where they would collect matzah shekel. They're called Tiklin Chavatin and Tiklin Atikin. Tikkun Chavatin means new shkolim, Atikin means old. So Tikkun Chavatin is for every year's matzah shekel. And Tikkun Atikin is if a person didn't give matzah shekel last year, then they give it now. So now in a similar vein of the two groups of shkolim, one of them goes into Tikkun Chavatin and is used for this year's korbanos, and the other one goes into Tikkun Atikin and is used for various other expenses of the Beis Hamikdash in the city of Yerushalayim. The point is, in other words, that we see that we have a case where the shluchim swear to the gizbarim. And even, in other words, we're dealing with money that already is considered to belong to Hekdesh, because they already took the Trumas Alishka, having in mind that having in mind that money, and it's considered already to be in the possession of Hekdesh, and we're saying that the Shluchim swear. So we're saying that so in other words, on the face of it, so on Mishnah said that they don't swear to Hekdesh, that Hashem Achinam doesn't swear to Hekdesh. So Amar Shmuel Hacha B'Noses Sachar Askinim. Shmuel says, because the difference is, this Mishnah that we quoted from Shkalim is talking about a Shomer Sachar. So he's not swearing in order to be potter from paying, because a Shomer Sachar is in fact chayav for Gneva V'Aveda. V'nishborin little scharim. They're swearing because they want to be able to collect their fee. They were hired to guard this money on the way to Yerushalayim, and now they want to collect their fee. Well, the question is, why are they collecting their fee? First of all, the question before we get to how they're collecting their fee. The whole point was they were hired in order to guard the money, and they obviously didn't because it was stolen or lost. So we'll get back to that soon. But first, we have to ask if all they're going to base in for is in order to collect their fee. Then first of all, if Achin Nishborin La Gizborin, then why are they swearing to the Gizborin? Nishborin Levnei Ha'ir Mevarim. They should be swearing to the Bnei Ha'ir. Either way, they should be swearing to Bnei Ha'ir. Because either way, it's not the Gizborim who are paying them, it's the people of the city who hired them and are going to be paying them. So now, if they're trying to collect their, if they're trying to collect their wages, then they should be going to the people of the city. And the answer is, Amar Rava, Nishborim Levnei Ha'ir B'mayim Gizborim. You're right. It doesn't mean they ever swear to the Gizborim. It means they swear to the people of the city that they weren't careless, that they weren't careless now how it is that they're collecting their fee. In fact, it was stolen. We'll get back to it in a second. But they do it in the presence of the Gizborim because after all, in this case, it's Hekdesh that loses out because Hekdesh was expecting to get in this money and now they don't and therefore they have a shortfall. So it's true. The Gizborim, it's true as far as collecting their fee. So it's like this. As far as paying, of course, they being Shomer Sachar and there was Gneva V'Aveda, if we assume it was regular Gneva V'Aveda, then they're going to have to pay. Then they're going to have to pay the Gizborim. And that's that. That makes up the shortfall for the Beis Mikdash. Meanwhile, though, they want to collect their wages. So you're right. The Bnei Ha'ir are balled in for that, but they swear in the presence of the Gizborim, this way they don't suspect them. Now there could be several possible there could be several possible people that we're talking about suspecting. We want to have that you could have that the Gizborim shouldn't suspect the people of the city that they didn't designate Matzah Shekel. You could have that they'd be choshed the shluchim that maybe they didn't do their job properly or whatever. So they need to swear. So they're swearing to the people of the city, Rabbi is explaining, but they're swearing the presence of the Gizborim so that the Gizborim themselves don't suspect the people of the city of being careless and not sending in their matzah shekel. The inami or another possibility, in order that the Gizborim shouldn't think that the people of the city were pesheya in sending a shomer chinam rather than a shomer sachar. Like this, if the shomer chinam. If it was a shomer chinam, it would be careless on the part of the people of the city. The Gizborim could well tell them, "Look, you realize this is an important thing. You bring it to the Beis Mikdash. What are you having somebody bring it only for free? You should have hired somebody, and then you have a higher degree of responsibility." So like this. Therefore, the shluchim are in fact shomer sachar, says Rabba. Shmuel and said we're talking about Shomer Sachar, and Rabba is explaining that now they swear to the people of the city in the presence of the Gizbarim, so that the Gizbarim know that the people of the city in fact did everything they could. They hired a Shomer Sachar, there wasn't anything more they could do. Well, the question is, the problem is, the Mishnah says that they were stolen or lost. The Shomer Sachar, the name of Abed, the Chiyuv and Mechayim. Now, a Shomer Sachar is higher for those kinds of things. So fine, you're going to say that because again, we learned in our Mishnah, that when it comes to Hekdesh, you don't have the normal rules of Shomrim, so therefore maybe the Shomer Sachar doesn't have to pay Hekdesh. But certainly they should be forfeiting their pay. They were hired to guard this against the name of Aveda. They fell down on the job. So why should they be suing the people of the city to collect their fee when they didn't do their job properly? So the answer is Amar Rava, Nignavu Belistin Mizuyam. The answer is that Nignavu doesn't always mean that it was stolen by regular Ganovim. It can mean that it was robbed from them by armed robbers. As we learned in Baba Kama, an armed robber is considered somewhere between a Ganav and a Gazlan. A classic Gazlan is where he grabs it out of the other person's hand. A Ganav is where he hides out and takes it stealthily. A Listin Mizuyam hides out by the road, by the side of the road, in order to jump out on people and rob them. So therefore, to that extent, he can be considered like a ganav. On the other hand, though, he's considered it's an onus. It's not a regular case of gneva, and a shemah socher is potter on onus. And similarly, ovu would not mean that it was lost in the regular way, as in that it fell out or something, that it fell out of their pocket or whatever. It means shatova svinasa bayam means they were bringing it on a boat and the boat sank, which again is an onus. So now shemasachar is potter from onus. So they should be in fact entitled to collect their fee. We guarded it against regular neva and regular aveda. Onus were potter as shemasachar. And therefore, in fact, we should be entitled to collect our fee. So that's what's going on over here then. So we're saying that these shomim are shomim sachar. So now, depending whether nitrima atruma or loin nitrima atruma is whether the money is considered to belong to the people of the city or to the gizbarim. Either way, we're saying that when they also want to collect their fee. Now, when it comes to swearing to the people of the city, that they do, but they do it in the present, but when Hektish stands to lose out, namely in this case where Hektish is not going to be getting this year's matzah shekel from this city, and they were expecting to, and they already took money from the Lishka, having in mind that it's going to cover that as well, then therefore, so in that case they would swear to the Gizborim, and in the other case they would swear to the people of the city in the presence of the Gizborim, because again, so the Gizborim don't think that they were careless or failed to send the matzah shekel altogether, or so forth. So that's the situation. So therefore, it doesn't contradict our Mishnah that says that a Shomer Chinam doesn't swear to Hektish, because here we're talking about a Shomer Socher, and he's not swearing to be Potter. He's swearing to collect his payment. Okay, all that is one answer. Rabbi Yechanan gives a different answer to reconcile that Mishnah with our Mishnah. Holmani Rav Shimon. Rabbi Yechanan says that Mishnah in Shkolim goes specifically like Rav Shimon. In our Mishnah, he had said that there's a difference between Kodshim Shechai Bachu Yosan and She'en Chai Bachu Yosan. There's a difference between Kodshim Hare Olai and Hare Zu, where you say Hare Olai, that I obligate to bring myself to bring a korban, then it means the Achrayus is on him. And if later on he designates an animal for that purpose and it gets lost or stolen or becomes a Baal Mum or what have you, then he has to designate a different animal instead. So that's Chai Bachur Yosan. Then you have Korchim She'en Chai Bachur Yosan, when he says Hare Zu, and to begin with he says this animal should be a korban, and then if anything happens to that animal, he's not responsible to give a different one instead. Now Rav Shimon in our Mishnah had said that when it comes to Korchim She'en Bachur Yosan, because you're responsible to make it up, to give a different animal instead, therefore to that extent it's considered the property of a hedyet, and therefore you have to... And therefore, the regular rules of a shomer would apply to that, says Rav Shimon. And in the Mishnah in Shavuos, he adds also, not only is there no enah, but there is a shavua for them, just like any regular nichzeh hediyah. So we don't need to say that the Mishnah in Shkolim about people sending their matzah shekel is talking about a shomer sachar, and it's talking about collecting their fee, and so on and so forth. It can be talking about a shomer chinam, and he's swearing that he wasn't pesheha. And that's not a problem, because in the case where they're going to have to give other matzah shekel, it's called Shem Shechai Bachur Yosan. So therefore, so as an appointed of Shimon, therefore, Nishborin Alein, you would swear on them. Okay, you want to ask Sotenach Adshema Nitruma Atruma. Okay, well, that explains before the Truma was taken, before they took the first collection of the Truma out of that chamber, then you can say at that point the money is not yet considered to belong to Hektish, And at that point, if it turns out that the money is lost and they take the person to Beis Din and so forth, then they are going to have to give all the matzah shekel. So therefore, it is chayav b'achriyusa. Mishum nitruma hatruma. But what about after the truma has been taken? Where at that point, when they take out the first truma from the chamber over there and use it for the expenses of the Beis Hamikdash, they have in mind, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, all of the money that's yet to come, all the money that's on its way and that got lost on the way and so on and so forth. And therefore, the loss is on Hekdash. The people of the city are not going to have to give other matzah shekel. So then, Konshim Shein Chayav B'Achriyusin Ninu. So then at that point, it's Konshim that he's not Chayav B'Achriyusin. So even Rav Shimon should agree that in that case there's no Shavua, and yet the Mishnah in Shkalim says that there's a Shavua. The Tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, Termin Al Ovud, when they take out the Matzah Shekel, when they take out the boxes of coins from the Lishka over there, they have in mind Al Ovud, they have anything that was lost on the way, Bala Govri, and on what was already collected, and the Shliach is on his way and has not yet reached this Nikdash, Bala Osim the Govis, and about what's yet to be collected, note, somebody who has not even sent his Matzah Shekel yet, Rashi explains, everybody is supposed to be sending their Matzah Shekel and Adar. This is why we read Parshas Shkolim on the Shabbos before over Chodesh Adar, but now you could have a person with an Oynas and he wasn't able to send it an Adar, so then he would send it in, so he'd send it any time during the year, and it would still go towards that year's Korbanah. So it would go in the Tiklan Chavitin box, Rashi explains, it would go in the new Shkolim box because he gave it this year. If it happened for an entire year, he hadn't given Matzah Shekel, and then the following year he gives to make up for last year, then that would go in Tiklan Atikin in the box labeled Old Shkolim, and that would go for various other expenses of the Beis Hamikdash. Anyway, the point is, so they have in mind, each time they take the Truma, they have in mind, three times a year, before Pesach, before Sukkot, and before Shavuos, and before Sukkot, they have in mind all of this, and they have that in mind, meaning, in other words, now at this point, Rashi explains, if somebody brings his Matzah Shekel, so not even if he brings it the following year, if he brings it after the third Truma, the third Truma is taken is taken around Rosh Hashanah, either right before or right after Rosh Hashanah, in preparation for Sukkot. From then on, if anybody brings his Matzah Shekel for the year, then it goes into Tikkun Atikin, and it goes, it actually brings from Mishnah and Shkalim, that it goes, among other things, towards repairing the walls and the towers of Yerushalayim. Anyway, the point is that again, when they take the truma, they have in mind all of that. They have in mind that they have in mind to cover all of the matzah shekel that has already been collected, that's yet to be collected any time before the third truma, and that's on its way, and so forth. So the loss is hektish, and the owner, the people who sent the matzah shekel, are not going to have to pay. So it's kodshim she'in chai b'achriyosan. Even Reb Shimon should hold that that's considered money of hektish, and therefore that the rules of our Mishnah apply, and therefore there's no aynah and there's no shavua. So what is Rav Yochanan saying? That the Mishnah in Shkolim, which refers to the Shluchim swearing, is going to be according to Rav Shimon. That only works for half of that Mishnah. Here we have, as we said before, we have the Machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos, what it means, Termin ala Ovud, ala Govri, ala Osid Ligovus. Rashi explains it means including what was lost on the way. Tosfos says that what it means is that ala Ovud means where it already reached the Gizbar, and then it was lost before it reached the chamber, before they took the Truma. Ala Govri would be what's in the hands of the Shliach and is coming on the way, ala Osid Ligovus, and what's yet to be collected later on, and hasn't yet been given to the Shliach at the time when they take the Truma. So again, the question is, if you're going to say Rav Yochanan that Mishnah in Shkolim is appointed Rav Shimon, then how does that fit with the fact that Rav Shimon is only saying that happens by Kodshim Shechai Bachri Yosan? We're here, we're talking about Kodshim She'in Chai Bachri Yosan as well. Ela, Omer Rav Elazar, so Rav Elazar says no. Rather, the Shavua is in fact, we are talking a regular Shavua of Shomrim, and we are talking about a Shomer Chinam, but Shavua is a Takana Chachamim. This Shavua is a special Takana of the Chachamim. so that people are not careless with hekdesh. Meaning, min haTorah, it's true, a person should not have to swear when he's handling money of hekdesh, because he's a shrema chinam. So again, Rabbi Elazar is still explaining, like Rabbi Yochanan, that we're talking about a shrema chinam in that Mishnah in Shkalim, not like Shmuel and said, we're talking about a shrema sachar, and we're talking about him swearing in order to collect his payment, but rather we're talking about a shrema chinam, and he's swearing to be potter from paying. But in this particular case, we don't want people to be careless with hekdesh, and therefore we made a special takana that they should swear. We said in the Mishnah, Noisis Socher Enim Mashalim, we said that a Shema Socher on property of Hekdesh does not pay for the regular name of Aveda that a regular Shema Socher would have to pay. Romile Rav Yosef Bachoma the Rabbah. Rav Yosef Bachoma, who was Rabbah's father, who was Rava's father, so Rava's father asked Rabbah. Tnam, we learned in our Mishnah, Noisis Socher Enim Mashalim, we're saying that a Shema Socher doesn't pay for Gneva Aveda or a mini, but I have a contradiction from a Braisa. Hasilcher is a poil. If a gizbar of Hekdesh hires a worker and pays him with money of Hekdesh, Lishmer is a para to watch the para adruma. So they bought a para adruma, and it's going to be a little while before they need it, because the para adruma is not always available, so they buy it when it first becomes available, and then meanwhile they need somebody to watch it, make sure nobody puts a yoke on it, make sure it doesn't develop a mum. Or they hire somebody to watch a child. Now you have the Mishnah in Masechta Parah explains in detail that when it came to part of the process of preparing the Parah Adruma is they want the Kohen Gadol himself have to be sprinkled with Parah Adruma water before he does the whole thing of preparing the next Parah Adruma. Now they wanted to find, for that purpose, they wanted to find people who had never become Tameh. Now your average person has become Tameh sometime during their lifetime, so instead they had special arrangement. Some mothers would come, we learned about this briefly in Ksumas, some mothers would come to special areas in Yerushalayim that were built in such a way where it's impossible for them to become Tameh with any, even with anything very deep underground. They have these chatseras built with arches, with vaults on top of vaults to block any tumah from coming to the surface. They would give birth over there, and these children would be raised there, and eventually, when they're 7 or 8 years old, then they would take them down to the Shiloyach spring in a special way, and they would fill up cups of water and put the ashes in them, and then it would be available to sprinkle on the Kohen Gadol. So now you have Lishmer Satinik, is to watch these children that they don't become tummy. Or Lishmer Sazroyin, or third possibility is that Hekdesh is hiring somebody to watch seeds that are growing. Now Rashi here says two possibilities. One is we're talking about they would plant the wheat for the Korban HaOmer and for the Shtei HaLechem, sometime, in particular the Omer, which is very much in Yom HaOmer now that we're in Sfiras HaOmer. So they would plant the barley for the Omer 70 days before Pesach. Now, during that time, during those 70 days, they need to hire somebody to watch it to make sure that somebody doesn't take it or to make sure that animals don't trample it or whatever. That's Rashi's first explanation. The second explanation is we're talking specifically during Shmita year. During Shmita year, of course, they can't plant. They need to rely on Svichim, on plants that grow on their own, to be able to find the barley for the Omer and similarly the wheat for the Shtei HaLechem. So when they find a stand of barley or a stand of wheat, that is growing on its own, meaning inevitably you have when you're harvesting the grain from the previous year, inevitably some grain falls to the ground, and eventually the following year it sprouts. That's called svichim. So now, midrabanan, by the way, you're not supposed to eat svichim of grain or vegetables because the chacham were concerned the person might go and actually plant them himself and then claim that they grew on their own. But here we're talking about to use them for karbanos, and therefore the chacham waived that rule. But now you need somebody to guard those svichim and tell people, please don't take them, they're reserved for the Bais Mikdash. Tosfos actually points out that you have a problem over there. If you guard produce during Shmita, then you're not allowed to eat it. So then we know anything that's used for korbanos has to be something that a yid would be allowed to eat. So how does that work over here? So Tosfos explained that it doesn't mean if somebody physically wanted to take it, it wouldn't actually prevent him. He would inform people, you should know this is reserved for Hekdesh, and automatically people would hold back from taking it themselves. So, but it's not like he would physically prevent them from taking it, Tosfos says, because it's true, that wouldn't work within the dinim of Shmita. Other Rishonim explain differently that, The Rashash in Akron points out that maybe it's only a problem when the owner of the field himself is watching it. That would be when it's also to eat, but not when somebody else is watching it. In this case, Hekdesh is hiring Shogrim, so therefore it's not really the same thing. An interesting question is when you have fruit that was grown during Shemitah, with the Isser, for example, you have in the case of fruit, you're allowed to eat what grows during Shemitah. Of course, you have to have something to eat, but you're not allowed to cultivate it yourself. If somebody does cultivate it, is it in fact also to eat or not? Is a whole question which comes up, of course, every year in Eretz Yisrael with produce that comes from Eretz Yisrael during Shemitah. So Hekdesh hired a worker to watch any of these things. The Ramban actually explains, we don't actually mean necessarily that we're talking about Hekdesh hiring somebody. The Ramban explains, we're talking about Pasha, the person hires a worker to watch his cow or to babysit his children or to watch his grain growing. Anyway, the point, and then in that case, the question is not so much from Hekdesh. The question is, we learned in the Mishnah that the dinim of Shomim, the regular dinim of Shomim, don't apply to Karka, and here, where the grain and the tats are obviously then a pora and a tinnik, is not Karka, so sure, the dinim of Shomim would apply to them like that would apply to anything else, but the question is really more on the, when it says he's watching seeds that are growing to make sure, again, that no animals or people, take them or trample them or whatever, where that's Mechobel Karka, and therefore it should be like Karka. Anyway, the Braisa says, so a person hired these workers for any of these things, for Hekdesh, like Rashi says, or for Chulin, like the Ramban says, you don't pay him for Shabbos, you can't pay him for Shabbos, because you can't take pay for work that you do on Shabbos, even when in this case, by the way, we're not talking about the work itself is intrinsically also, you're perfectly allowed to babysit on Shabbos, you're perfectly allowed to sit there and watch seeds on Shabbos, but it's Schar Shabbos, and for that reason alone it would be also. So you're not allowed to. Therefore, if something happens to them on Shabbos, the Shomer is not responsible because he wasn't Shomer at that time. On the other hand, Hoya Schir Shabbos, but if he was hired for an entire week and he's being paid by the week, Schir Chodesh, or he's being paid by the month, Schir Shana, Schir Shavua, or he's being hired by the year or by the 7 year period, Noisim Lois Schir Shabbos, then you do pay him Schir Shabbos because then it's called Bahavla. You're including the pay for Shabbos together with the pay for the week. And this is a practical din, Hilchos Shabbos. So if you're hiring somebody for a job, which is going to be over Shabbos as well, you have to pay him in a lump sum. So you pay him, for example, monthly, and then all the Shabbosim of the month are included in it. In the case of Bali Kriya and Chazonim, and whatever you have the heter that they do, is that you're paying them for their preparation before Shabbos. And that's included, and then included in that is the fact that they're doing the actual chazonus or whatever on Shabbos. Anyway, so l'ficha achrayus Shabbos olav. Therefore, the Braisa says because you're paying them, therefore the achrayus of anything that happens on Shabbos is going to be on him because he is in fact being hired for weekdays and Shabbos as well. Now my lav l'shalim. Now when we say achrayus Shabbos olav, don't we mean that if something goes wrong, if there was a gneiva aveda on Shabbos, then he would have to pay? So Rav Yosef Bachoma is asking Rabbah, so you see that a Shomer Sacher does have to pay Hekdesh. Or again, according to the Ramban, the question is that you see that even by karka, even by seeds that are attached to the ground and growing from it, that you have to pay. So we see that a Shomer Sacher does have to pay. So Rabbah answers, Lord, perhaps it's Schorei. No, we mean that Lachrai is Shabbos Olav in the sense that he doesn't get paid. Because he didn't do the job properly. But either way, he'd be potter because we're saying Hekdesh and Karka are potter from a Shomer Sacher pain. So if Yosef Bachama asks, Yehochi Reisha, Dikatoni, well then what about the Reisha of the Braisa that says, Ein Achrayis Shabbos Olav, that says he's not responsible for what happens on Shabbos? Hochi Namid left the Lahafsin Sfari. Are you going to say that they are also Ein Achrayis Shabbos Olav, mean that he's still entitled to his pay? There's no pay anyway. He's anyway not getting paid on Shabbos. The Braisa said that you don't pay him for the part of the work that he does on Shabbos. So therefore, there's nothing to talk about. There's no pay for him to forfeit for us to be talking about whether Achrayus Olav or not. obviously it has to be talking about the achrayus of the actual bnei v'aveda. And the Braisa is saying in the Sefer that achrayus Shabbos olav, which means that he does have to pay, not like our Mishnah that says that you know that a shomer sacher doesn't pay on hekdesh and on karka. Ishtim. So Rabbah was quiet and he didn't have an answer. On the way, then he said to Rav Yosef, have you heard anything about this? I'm stumped. Do you Taka have an answer? On the way, Rav Yosef Ahama says, yes. Rav Sheshes said that we're talking about, the Braisa is talking about where they made a kinyan. They made, you don't have to make a kinyan for things like that. I'm making a shomer, but he can make a kinyan that if something goes wrong, he's going to pay. So it's true, when it comes to hektish, normally a shomer sacher doesn't have to pay, and when it comes to karka, normally a shomer sacher doesn't have to pay. But konu miyodi, when they made a kinyan, that he is in fact chayev, well fine, a person can be machayev himself with a kinyan, with a kinyan sudur, on whatever he wants. So therefore, that would be the case. And Rav Yochanan said the same thing, that it means when they made a kinyan, and he was machayev himself voluntarily, it's something that he would not ordinarily be chayev in. So Tosfos actually points out, a kinyan might not even be necessary on the face of it. On the face of it, all you need is a tznai. But here you're talking about that here you would have been taught to even from a shavua. And now you're going to the opposite extreme and being machayev him to pay, then that he's not going to do without a kinyan. So that answers that. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Rav Shimon Omer Kodshim Shechayev Achu Yosin Yesh Lahem Inah. We said Rav Shimon had distinguished between Kodshim, whether a person has Chayev Achu Yosin, like we said before, when a person says Harei Olai, where now he's obligated to bring the Korban. It can also be, by the way, for example, a Chantos or an Osham, where he's obligated to bring it regardless. So then, because he has a monetary interest in it, namely, that he's going to have to make up for the korban if it gets lost or becomes balmum or what have you, then therefore it's considered mum and hedya, and therefore Rav Shimon says the dinim of kefil and shrua and kefil and above hamisha and so forth and so forth all apply to it. He says yesh lain einah v'shein chay bachrus and ein lain einah. Whereas if ein chay bachrus your son, if it's a voluntary korban, and he said harezu, so therefore he's not chay bachrus your son. Therefore it's not considered mum and hedya, and there's no einah when it comes to it. So the Gemara says, Tony Tana Kameda Rav Yitzchak Bar Abba. A Tana taught the following Braisa in front of Rav Yitzchak Bar Abba. The Braisa says, Rav Shimon is saying, Kodshim Shechayev Bachru Yosem Chayev, when it comes to Kodshim, that he's Chayev Bachru Yosem, that he would have to make up for the missing carbon, then there's the he's Chayev, then the Shomer is, so then the shomer is chayev. So now what happened is if the shomer, so actually the context of the braisa is talking about the din that we learned about in Bava Kamma, that if a shomer denies falsely that something as far as the pikadon, he claims I never received it or I returned it to you, or he claims that something happened to it that would make him potter, such as gnei v'aveda for shachinam, etc. So we learned in Bava Kamma that later on when he does tshuva, so if he swears falsely on it, we learned that if he does tshuva, then he has to pay a keren plus a choymesh, and he has to bring a korban asher. So this braisa says, when it comes to if the shomer is watching, coaching chay bachru yosan chayev, then he would be chayev that keren v'choymesh and the osham mshani korban b'shem v'chichesh, because then you can apply to those what the pasuk is saying when he denied something against Hashem. The expression of the pasuk is nefesh kisechta u'mal amal b'shem. When a person does wrongly and he trespasses against Hashem, v'chichesh b'amisay, and he denies a claim from a fellow yid. So now this the braisa is saying, since you have the word v'chichesh and he denies between the words b'shem and b'amisay, so therefore we can daushen that there's two kinds of denial. There's a denial where he's denying a claim of a korban that belongs exclusively to Hashem, and then we apply to that b'shem v'chichesh, he denied a claim of a korban that belongs exclusively to Hashem, v'she'ena chayev b'achru yosan, and the braisa continues, when he's not chayev b'achru yosan, when it's a korban, where he's not going to have to make up the shortfall, potter, then he would be potter from the korban for the false shvua, shani korban b'amisa v'chichesh, because then we apply what the pasuk is saying, that he denied a claim only from a fellow person. In other words, because it doesn't belong to Hekdesh. Amalei, sort of Yitzchak tells him, Klape Laya, which way is this going? Which way, which, Laya means which way? Klape means which way? Laya means where? So where is this Braisa going? Meaning, in other words, it seems to be backwards. He says, Ipcha Mistabra. On the contrary, the logic is the other way around. When Eina Chayav Bachur Yosan belongs more to Hashem, because then that means the lost, so to speak, is on Hashem. He voluntarily was going to bring a certain korban, and now Hashem, so to speak, losing out of it because in the end he's not bringing the korban. And on the other hand, when Chayav Bachur Yosan, he's going to end up bringing another korban. Therefore, we can say that's more of a chichesh ba'amisa. He's denying a claim from a fellow yid. Because that fellow yid is going to have to make up that, is going to have to make up that shortfall, is going to have to bring another carbon. So the braisa seems to be backwards. In fact, Rashi points out that the braisa is backwards in a double way, kind of. First of all, that karchim shechay bachu yosan should be more from ba'amisa the chichesh, and karchim she'en chay bachu yosan should be from ba'ashem the chichesh. And second of all, there's more reason to be machayev him by hediyah, because we're saying by hekdesh you usually potter. So the braisa is doubly backwards. In fact, the Maharam shift. That's why they said that. That's Rashi understand. That's why Rabbi Yitzchak Ba'aba is using a double expression. Klape laya. Which way is this going? Ipcha mistabra. It seems the other way around because there were two things in the braisa that seem to be backwards. Omaleis, the Tana asks, Isne, should I delete this braisa from my repertoire of braisas? Because obviously it's mistaken. Amalei, so Yitzchak tells him, Loi, no, you don't have to remove it. Hachi karma, but you should understand for the future that the braisa means like this. Kodshim chachay bachur yosan. It means that if he's chayav bachur yosan, and then the shomer denies it, chayav, then the shomer is chayav in that korban because they belong to Amisai, the Israbu mivashem bechich. On the contrary, you should argue that you want to argue that when we say dichtiv v'ashem b'chichesh, we don't mean that's a reason to be that's a reason to be mechayev him. What we mean is you would think on the basis of the words v'ashem b'chichesh that he should be potter because it belongs to hekdesh, but nevertheless because there is also a side in it which belongs to amisa to a fellow yid, therefore he's chayev to swear. On the other hand, if he's not chayav b'achur yosan potter, then that shomer would be potter from the shvur. This is an exception to the rule of chichesh b'amisoi, because they're not truly the makdin's property because he's not chayav b'achur yosan. So in other words, the braisa is not giving reasons why he should be chayav and why he should be potter respectively. Just the opposite. The braisa is saying you would think in the first case he should be potter because it's primarily Ba'ashem, and we're saying no, there is an element of Ba'amisa in there as well. And in the second one, you would think he's potter because he's chayav because Ba'amisa, and we're saying no, it's not considered Ba'amisa because it's not chayav Ba'amisa. The Mishnah had said, Rabbi Yehuda Oim Acham Moichus. Now, the Mishnah had mentioned again, you have Avodim, Shtores, Karkoris, and Hekdesh, to which the dinim of Einar don't apply. Now, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Oim Acham Moichus said, the Torah, my Golos of Behema, Einar, Einar. Rabbi Yehuda says that also when a person sells a Sefer Torah or a diamond, my Golos would be actually a pearl, whatever, a pearl, or a Behema, Einar, Einar, then Rabbi Yehuda says there's no dinim of Einar, the regular dinim of Einar don't apply to them as either. So why is that? Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Apa Moshe Sefer Torah, Ein Lo'ina. Rabbi Yehuda said the person sells a Sefer Torah. There's no Ein'a in it. Lefishen Kate for Domel, because there's no limit to its value. A Sefer Torah is priceless, so therefore you can't put a price on it. So therefore you can't say that there was Ein'a when he overpaid for it. Or Behemo, Mangolus, Ein'a Ein'a. What about as far as animals and as far as pearls? There's no Ein'a. Misha Adam Roitzel Zavdon. Because a person often would want to buy another one to match one that he already has. He already has an animal of a certain strength. Now he wants to pair it up with another animal that has similar strength. It actually points out otherwise you're putting too much of the burden on the stronger animal and therefore weakens the stronger one. And the same way with pearls. You have pearls of a certain kind and now you want another one that matches them. So therefore, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda is saying a person would indeed be willing to overpay for these kinds of things. In fact, the Ramban points out, now we did learn we did learn earlier in the perek that anah applies both to the seller and to the buyer. You can have this anah on the buyer's part if he underpays for the thing. So then Rambam says, when Rabbi Yehuda says ein lahen anah, so these three things, he's talking about in terms of selling. Obviously, in terms of buying, there would be anah because of all this logic that we're saying, that we're saying the Torah is priceless and that the behema and so forth he wants to match up would apply. Obviously, those are going to apply to the moser. So therefore, so what we mean is enayna means, in other words, that if he overcharges for them, Rabbi Yehuda holds that's not a problem because you can say a person would voluntarily overpay for them for these reasons. Amrulois, the Chamak answered that thing. Valayakol adam reitzel azavka. So why limit it to only those three things? There's lots of other things that a person would want to pair up with other ones or to match them with things that he already has. And obviously, we still say enayna applies to them. But Rabbi Yehuda, so what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? Hani chashivilei v'hani lechashivilei. It's true, a person may want to match all kinds of things, but usually a person is not going to be willing to overpay a lot in order to be able to do that. Only when it comes to animals and pearls, then it's particularly chaviv and particularly important and chaviv to him, so therefore he's willing to pay, to be willing to overpay for them. So the Gemara says, v'ad kama. So up to what point does Rabbi Yehuda hold that I know I wouldn't apply to those things? And the answer is, I'm going to name ad kedei de mehem, up to equal to their value. Meaning, in other words, that if he charges twice their real value, then there's not enough. But if it's any more than that, then even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that enough applies to those things. We looked the other day, there's machlokas rishonim as far as karka, the other things that the Mishnah had mentioned, that there's no enough to them, does not mean there's no enough no matter how large the overpayment is, or is there enough also like this behemah and magolus, according to Rabbi Yehuda, when he pays more than twice what they're supposed to be worth. We discussed the other day, Tosfos had learned that enah would apply to karka under those circumstances, that if he overpays more than twice the value of the karka, and then we said there are other rishonim, the Raivan and other rishonim, who say that actually no, by them there would never be any enah, no matter how much the overpayment is, even if it's much more than twice the amount. Again, that's all according to that. So that's as far as karka, according to everybody. And here we're saying as far as behemah and magolus specifically, and say the Torah specifically according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara continues. Tanya, we learn in a brisa. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda Omer, Afa Moshe. He was more. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda says that Einar doesn't apply to you. Afa Moshe sus v'sayif v'chatita in v'mochama. Also during wartime, when a person sells a horse or a sword. Or chatita, in which it actually says means a shield, ein lahem einah, then einah doesn't apply to those things, because a person's life depends on them. So in other words, then a person would be willing to overpay for them, even if it's far more than the actual value of it. It's interesting that Lahavdil, in American law, we would call that price gouging, and we would say he's not supposed to do that, but here, the Gemara is saying there's not a problem with it, because according to the Yehuda ben Maseira, anyway, that halacha is not like him. But according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira, he would say, we're not worried about price gouging, because chaye nefesh depends on them, then therefore you can charge whatever you want from them for them, because a person is going to be willing to buy them at whatever price in order to be able to protect his life. Okay. Mishnah says, here we've been talking about, since the middle of the parak, we've been talking about the dinim of einah as far as buying and selling. So now the Mishnah says there's another kind of einah as well. In the Pesukim, in Parashas Bahar, that talk about einah, first it mentions about buying and selling. When you sell to a fellow yid, or you buy from a fellow yid, then there shouldn't be any einah. A few Pesukim later, the Torah again repeats, don't wrong, each one of you should not wrong the other. That's talking about einah's dvarim. That's talking about wronging somebody verbally, and that's going to be the subject of our Mishnah. The same way as einah applies to buying and selling, the same way einah also applies to verbal, doing something that's going to hurt somebody's feelings. Which there was a number of examples. For example, you shouldn't ask a storekeeper or anybody for that matter, how much are you selling this thing for? When you're not actually planning to buy. Because then the guy is going to feel bad. He thought he's going to make a sale and then he's not. Sometimes there might be other people who are interested in it as well. And they see that you're interested and therefore they hold back. And now he lost potential customers. So this would be included in a nasty volume. A practical example of that is nowadays you have many times a person will go into a store and price something and then will go and look for the same thing online. So that would be an example of the nasty volume we're saying over here. Another example, Imhoya Bal Tshuva. If your fellow Yid is a Bal Tshuva, lo yomer lo yizchor ma'aseh harishonim. Don't tell him, hey, remember what you used to do. Remember all those averas that you used to do before you did Tshuva. Now, Rabbeinu Yohonasan points out an interesting point. If the guy is not a Bal Tshuva, then you are allowed to mention his averas to him so that he will, if he hasn't done Tshuva yet, so that he'll do Tshuva. So you're allowed to do that to motivate him to do Tshuva. But if you already did Tshuva on them, then you have no business mentioning it to him. Another example, if the person that you're talking to is a son of Gerim, don't tell him, remember what your ancestors used to do, all the different kinds of Averis that your ancestors used to do. The Ger lo son of lo sochotzenu, as the Pasuk says, don't wrong and don't oppress a Ger. And in fact, as Gemara is going to explain, when a person mistreats a Ger like that, he's over on an extra Isser above and beyond what he's over with a regular Yid. In a similar vein, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that even a descendant of Gerim, up to 10 generations, don't make fun of Goyim in his presence because he has a certain sensitivity. He knows that he descended from Goyim, that his ancestors became Gerim, and therefore he feels a certain affinity to them, and therefore you shouldn't speak badly of Goyim in his presence. So now Maharshal points out there is a distinction over here. When it comes to the Mishnah doesn't mention a Ger himself. The Mishnah is mentioning a Ben Ger. Because by a Ger himself, when you tell him Schor Ma'aseh HaRishonim, actually Maharshal points out that can be a compliment. That you're telling him, look at that, you used to be a Goy and you were so brave and you became a Ger. As opposed to a Baal Teshuva, to begin with, had the mitzvahs. You can't say you can't really say you were so brave to do the right thing. To begin with, you had those mitzvahs. You, a Ger, on the other hand, came voluntarily. And a Ben Ger also, he himself wasn't the one who was this guy, or his parents were. So therefore, to mention it to him would be enough. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Tana Abon, lo sonu ishas amiso, when the Pasuk says a Yid should not wrong his fellow Yid, by nas dvarim, akos medaber, that second Pasuk is talking about a nas dvarim. After omer by nas dvarim, or inela by nas moment. So you're saying it refers to a nas dvarim, maybe not, maybe it's another time talking about a nas dvarim, maybe it's another time talking about a nas moment. No, true, omer, few psa community, but it says, machisim kuro mimkar lami secha. When a few psukim earlier, it says when you buy from your fellow yid, then you shouldn't do enough. How do I know a small and almost? So I know a small and has already been stated. Ha, mani makayma, so do ishas hamiso, but I know a dvarim. It has to be referring to I know a dvarim. Because Tosfos said, now sometimes we do have, we'll just say, okay, it means that you're over on two lavin. But whenever possible, we try not to do that. We try to darshan an extra phrase in a positive, rather than saying that it just means an extra lab. So here, therefore, the Braisa is saying it means a nas mom. And the Braisa gives some examples, similar to our Mishnah. Okay, so, Imhoya Bal Tshuva, if the other guy was Bal Tshuva, Al Yomel is Schor Ma'aseh HaRishonim, don't tell him, remember what you used to do. Imhoya Ben Gerim, Al Yomel is Schor Ma'aseh HaRishonim, if he was a Ben Gerim, don't tell him, remember what your ancestors used to do. Tosfos, by the way, points out, there's a Loi Zu Af Zu. It's a greater chiddush. Not only don't mention to what he himself did, but don't even mention what his ancestors did. And again, Maharshal says, tell him himself, remember that you used to be a goy and you voluntarily came in and became a yid. That could be a good thing to tell him. Obviously, it'll depend on the tone of voice in which you tell it to him and all. But to tell him that remember what your ancestors did, where he had no choice in the matter, then that would be a nasty one. Another example, im hoya ger vol lilmud Torah. Another example, if he himself is a ger, he's coming to learn Torah, al yomalo, you can't tell him, hasha, ochel, nevelos, and trefus, shkotzim, or masim, this mouth that used to eat nevelos, and trefus, creepy, crawly creatures, which are very disgusting, vol lilmud Torah, shenitim, apiyad gora, and now you're coming to learn Torah that was given from the mouth of Hashem himself. Meaning, in other words, you're going to say, Marsha said these kinds of things are especially disgusting. And you're going to tell them that that same mouth, you're going to now learn the Torah that was given from Hashem's mouth. That would be a nasty word. What are you doing bringing up such a thing to him? Another example, im hoyu yisurim boin olav, if yisurim are coming on a fellow yid, or im hoyu chaloyin boin olav, or if he was, if sicknesses were coming on him, oishahoy makabaras bonav, or rahman al-fani, burying his children passed away in his lifetime, al yoyma loy kederach sha'omer loy chaveir of the yid. You don't say to a person the way that Eev's friend said to him after Eev suffered all the disasters that happened to him. He lost all his wealth and he lost his possessions, and when he lost his, and his children were killed. So his friends, his three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Sophar came to comfort him. And afterwards, so Eev starts with a whole speech complaining about why was I ever born, cursing the day he was born. And then each of them starts giving him, each of them gives him a speech as an answer, and Eev responds back. And that those debates make up the bulk of Sefer Eev. So one of the first things that the first friend, Eliphaz, says to him, "Hallo, you oska kisla secha." Isn't your fear your kisla? Now, there's a number of possibilities what kisla means. Rashi on the pasuk explains that it means something like foolishness. Like you've been fearing Hashem in a very foolish way. Like you're only doing it in order to receive reward from Hashem. And look at that. Now it turns out that it's not even working out for you. So Rashi over there understands the word kisla secha to mean that you were doing it in a foolish way, that you were doing it, you were pretending to be a Yorei Shamayim and you really weren't. Tosfos explains over here that means meloshen bitachin, like you all this time you were fearing and trusting in Hashem, but now you seem to not, but now you seem to be, that now you're complaining so much. Different other mafarshim on the pasuk can have different other possibilities. It can mean also, for example, that Eliphaz is telling him all this time you were fearing Hashem only because you trusted that because of that Hashem is going to do good for you. Anyway, the point is, he continues, tikvascha, your hope, the signs of achacha, and the fact that you were perfect in your ways, but Eliphaz continues, remember now, when did it ever happen that an innocent person was completely lost? In other words, in effect, he's telling him that you're obviously not such a tzaddik if such disasters happen. And the hello you're also kisla secha, depending on how you learn it, may also be, as Tosfos and as other mafarshim are learning, means that to begin with, your yiras shemayim was only superficial, and it was only in order to get schar, and not that you genuinely trusted in Hashem. Marsha gives yet another explanation. The word kisla secha can also be related to the word ksil, which among other things means a mazel in shemayim. So you were yorei, hello, you're osfa, you were fearing Hashem, kisvosecha, because your mazel was good. And that was tikvoscha, you were hoping that Hashem will continue to do you good, and therefore, besoim derachecha, because of that, you were acting in a perfect way. Now, all of a sudden, when everything's going bad, then you're complaining, and thinking that everything is controlled by mazel, so now you're acting wrongly, where until now, your yiras shemayim was only because your mazel was good. So this is an example of a nasty bottom to talk to him like that. To talk to him and to make it sound like his, and to accuse him of false yiras shemayim and to say that you must be guilty, otherwise Hashem wouldn't be punishing. So that's all an example of a nasdarim. Another example, im hoyu chamorim vachim tumu mimetu, if donkey drivers are coming and asking you for grain. Donkey drivers back then were like truck drivers now. They're the ones who transport grain or other goods from one place to another. Lo yemalam lachuritz a pliny. Don't tell them go to pliny to buy from him shuhu moichot tvor, because he sells grain v'yedem reshalay machal oilam, and you know that this guy never sold grain, so now it's going to be a nah for the person himself. He's going to be embarrassed when these people come and ask him to sell them grain, and he has to tell them I don't have any, and they themselves are going to be embarrassed that they went there for nothing. So all that would be a nah svarim. Rav Yehuda, ima afla yitla enev ala mecha, v'shasha in ledam. Rav Yehuda says another example of a nastavarim. We said before to ask the storekeeper how much something is worth, and then you're not planning to buy it. Rav Yehuda is adding even to look at the thing, to gaze at it as if you're planning to buy it when you don't have money to buy it. It's the same thing, in other words, that the storekeeper is going to think that he has a sale over here, and it turns out that not, and potential and other prospective customers are also going to think you're looking at it and you probably plan to buy it, and they're going to hold back, and therefore he's going to lose a sale. Now, the Braisa continues, all of this is given over to the heart. In each of these cases, you could have a person is genuinely doing this. A person genuinely asks the storekeeper for a price, and then he realizes afterwards, it's too expensive, or I can't afford it, or I don't really need it, or whatever. And the same thing with each of these other things. There could always be an excuse to why I did it. So it's given over to the heart. Whenever you have a mitzvah that depends on the heart, that depends on what you're thinking in your heart, then it says, you should fear Hashem, meaning in front of other people, you may get away with an excuse that I genuinely meant this, or I didn't realize that there's a problem with this or whatever. But Hashem knows the truth, so therefore don't think that you can get away with it. The Braisa, so thus far the Braisa. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yochanan Meshum Rav Shimon Yochai, Godol, Einas Dvarim, Me Einas Mamon. In fact, Einas Dvarim is worse than Einas of money. Because we see that when it comes to Einas Mamon, it doesn't say Einas Malakacha, but by Einas Dvarim it does. Meaning, in other words, so we see that the severity of it is much greater than Hashem is saying, I'm going to know the truth what you're doing. Rabbi Loza says there's another reason Einas Dvarim is worth. Zebud Gufay the Zebud Mamayinai, because Einas Dvarim affects the person's actual body. He feels bad, he feels a physical pain in his body, the Zebud Mamayinai, and the other one is only his money. So now, to be sure, we learned, Tosfos points out, we learned at the end of Bava Kamma, we said that a person steals even a pruta from somebody else is as if he stole his soul, because sometimes that pruta may be the last money that he has, and now he doesn't have any money, more money to buy food. But most people, it's not like that. So therefore, for most people, mammon is not quite as serious as gufay. And Rav Shmuel Bar Achmeni points out another point. Zen nitan li shavin, v'zen li nitan li shavin. A nas mammon, you can always, you defrauded somebody in the price of something, you can always give him back the extra amount. When it comes to Einas Dvarim, you can never really give it back. Even you ask the guy Mechila, but he still felt bad at the time, and there's no taking back the fact that he felt bad at that time. The Gemara continues, Tani Tana Kamedet of Nachmeid. So, Kol HaMalvin Pnei Chaveda Berdavim. If a person whitens somebody's face in public, and he embarrasses him in public, and causes his face to become pale, Pilu Shreifach Domim. It's as if he's spilling blood. Rabin, by the way, the smag explains that would be where there's at least two other people present. So, in other words, you have the one who's embarrassed, the one who's embarrassing him, and two other people. That's enough to be considered rabin. So we're saying that so amalim nechaver rabin kilo shreifach damim is as if he's spilling his blood. Omalei, sort of Nachmeid says to the Tana, shaper ka'amr. What you're saying is very correct. It's very true. That's considered like shvichas damim. The hazina, like I've seen, or we see when a person is embarrassed, the ozel sunk of osi chivra, the blood rushes to his face, and then the red goes away and is replaced by paleness. So literally, you've spilled his blood out of his face. So it can literally be considered shvichas damim. In fact, Ben Yehoyada says, why dom mim in the plural? Because every time he remembers about it, he's going to be embarrassed again. Every time he sees the people that he was embarrassed from, he's going to be embarrassed again. So it's literally shoifach dom mim many, many times. So Abaya in this connection asks Rav Dimi, Ma rova mai zehiri. In the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, what mitzvah, what midah are they particularly careful? Rav Dimi used to regularly travel back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Babel, so he knew what people do in Babel. Amalei said, "Dimi answers ba'achavuri abdi." They're extra careful with not being malvin pnei chaver. The Amar of Hanina. And the reason they're so careful is based on what Rav Chanina says. Akol yordim gehenim. Everybody goes down to gehenim. Chutz mishloisha, with the exception of the following three. And before you can even finish, the Gemara interjects. What do you mean? Akol thought that. What do you mean? Everybody, all Jews go to gehenim? No. Ela ema. What it means is kol yordim gehenim olim means anybody who goes down to gehenim comes up from there soon enough. Or right away, even, because a yid, as Gemara mentioned at the end of Chagiga, the fire of Gehenna has no power over a yid, chutz mishloisha sheyodin ve'ein olim, with the exception of three people who go down there and don't come up. Meaning Tosfa says doesn't mean they never come up. It means that they stay there for a prolonged period of time. The Elohim, and they are as follows. Habo'al Eishas Ish. A man has relations with an Eishas Ish. So he's gonna stay in, Gehenim for a certain period of time. Something that Tosfa says that would be 12 months. And a person embarrasses somebody else in public. Rear Tosfa says two possibilities. The Gemara may mean that such a person never comes out of Gehenim. Or it can mean he also comes out of there after 12 months. And the third one, where a person gives an ugly nickname to somebody else. So the Gemara asks, Machana, Haina Malvin, well, doesn't that amount to the same thing as Malvin Pnei Chaveira Barabin? And by the way, why Taka should it be so serious that we say that it's worse than a Ritzeach, for example, or Ritzeach Hussein goes down into Gehenim for a moment. He was saying this person goes down there for a prolonged period of time. Rabbeinu Yonah explains in Shari Tshuva, but the Ritzeach realizes how badly he acted. So they have, on the other hand, a Malvin Pnei Chaveira Barabin doesn't realize how bad it was. He rationalizes it can't have been that bad. The guy shouldn't have taken it so much to heart, etc. And therefore his punishment in Gehenim is a lot more severe. Anyway, so the Gemara asked him, the Machana Shem Machaveira, if he's calling a derogatory nickname to somebody else, what's so bad about that? Not what's so bad, but isn't that the same thing? Isn't that the same thing as Malvin Pnei Chaveira Barabin? And the answer is, Afogabde Dosh Baby Shmei. We're talking about even when the person is used to this nickname already. People have already called him by this name before. And he's already gotten sort of used to it. So therefore, he's not turning pale every time. Nevertheless, it's still also to do that. Because you're intending to embarrass him. And therefore, that's included in this category. So now, Rav Dimi was saying, the Jews of Eretz Yisrael were particularly careful with all of this to avoid these kinds of things. So the Gemara goes and continues on with the severity of being Malvin Pnei Chaveira Barabin, one of related topics, but that will be in next half of Gemara, Blessed Hashem.